Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. In 1966, a 12-year-old named Greg Ginn launched an electronics company in Southern California called Solid State Tuners. Greg then reinvented the company as a record label called SST. This allowed him to release music by his band, Black Flag. SST went on to release music by other influential bands like Husker Du, The Minutemen, and The Meat Puppets. The indie label was also at the forefront of the alternative music scene, releasing records by Sonic Youth and Dinosaur Jr. But by the 1990s, it all began to unravel. Music journalist Jim Ruland is the author of Corporate Rock Sucks, The Rise and Fall of SST Records. Our resident musicologist, Steve Godger, sat down with Jim to find out more.
It's really the story of how Greg Ginn and his associates started up the label with out of basically nothing. And it grew into this, basically this unstoppable force of indie music, you know, became the coolest, most sought after, most respected indie label in America. But as time went on, its practices became more and more corporate.
So what were the circumstances that made it possible for SST to exist?
I think that Greg Ginn's experience as a business owner prior to starting the record label was really invaluable. As a teenager, he'd started up this company called Solid State Tuners. From there, that gave him a lot of the tools and resources for the record label. When SST morphed into a record label, he really hit the ground running.
So he had business acumen, but what were the things in the world that sort of made it a perfect storm for SST to resonate with people?
Well, I think what was really interesting about, you know, punk rock and alternative music and indie music is that it was very regional. And as the technology grew and people had access to music outside of their regions that wasn't just the radio, for example, college radio stations starting up playing alternative music, playing songs that you wouldn't be able to hear on the airwaves was a huge factor in SST's growth. And also the emergence of video and MTV played a role as well in expanding its audience to people who might not hear this music.
How significant do you think SST's role was in the growth of punk music?
SST's role in establishing the touring circuit and the foundation that so many other bands followed really cannot be overstated. Black Flag went out and went to places in the United States and Canada that nobody else had ever been to, except maybe bands like DOA out of Vancouver. And they were relentless about it, and their touring operation got bigger and bigger and longer. They drove more miles, and they went to more places. And they weren't playing at established clubs either. They had built up this network of like-minded people who were renting out VFW halls or doing things in restaurants that didn't even have, you know, live music nights. It was very much a grassroots thing. And from there, it expanded, and many people followed. Black Flag took other bands on the label with them, and from there, it just grew.
Who are some of the bands that helped establish SST as a viable record label?
Well, I think some of the local bands that SST started out with that became very popular outside of the region definitely played a role. For example, the Minutemen, who some regarded as like the, you know, the kings of college radio, and were really starting to develop a following, and in fact were touring with REM in the weeks before guitarist and vocalist D. Boone died.
Let's say I got a number. That number's 50,000. That's 10% of 500,000.
Husker Du were huge, and the way they toured and traveled the country was extremely influential and was exactly what SST was looking for in artists, people that were prolific and not afraid to change their style and would tour relentlessly. Sonic Youth, for sure. Sonic Youth had already put out other records with independent labels, most notably Homestead. And by the time that they had signed with SST, had already toured Europe 4 or 5 times. So they were road dogs. They were very experienced. They had low expectations for, you know, what a tour could do for them, and were really about creating new music and putting in the work, and they really refined those songs on the road. Some bands, they test the music out on the road and then they go into the studio to perfect it. And Sonic Youth was the other way around. So by the end of a tour, a Sonic Youth song might sound very different than the way it did on the record.
So the band that actually put SST on the map and sort of was the impetus to start the label was Black Flag. Tell me about that band.
Black Flag was a really interesting band in that their sound was too hardcore for the established LA Hollywood punk scene. And that was really the impetus for SST, is that Greg Ginn said, fine, I'll do it myself and I'll keep the scene here in the South Bay, here in the beaches. And so the early bands that SST championed, you know, came from San Pedro and Torrance and Redondo Beach and things of that nature. Black Flag, you know, they had this amazing sound. And I think the thing that is most consistent about Black Flag is the intensity. You can hear the intensity in the songs, you can hear it on the records, and you could absolutely feel it when they perform live. Dallas Coward, ride the cold, rise above, we're gonna rise above.
Make this score what we say, rise above, we're gonna rise above. We talked about SST being a kind of a punk music label, at least to begin with, but one of the bands that broke that mold right away was the Meat Puppets.
Meat Puppets is a really interesting band because people didn't really know what to do with them. They didn't fit into any categories that were very easily identifiable. They sounded hardcore, but weren't. That first record sounded like a lot of noise, and it wasn't until they listened over and over again they realized that these were some brilliant musicians who were very much in control of what they were doing.
Greg Ginn's brother, Raymond Pettibone, played a major role at SST. What was his role there?
Raymond Pettibone is an incredible artist, and today a highly regarded and much sought after fine artist. But back then he was known as the Black Flag artist because his work was used on so many flyers and album covers. And there's something about Pettibone's vision. And it was a little bit retrograde in the way that it featured all these countercultural figures from the 60s, the late 60s and early 70s, all these Mansonoid figures, you know, they were with knives and semi-naked and, you know, just disturbing scenes with police officers and animals that was just shy of being grotesque. It didn't really matter where you saw these, whether it was on a flyer or on a poster or an album, it was arresting and it caught your attention. And Black Flag was the perfect soundtrack for those disturbing visions. What was interesting about Pettibone is that he never sat down and made a cover. He would not draw something to be used for a Black Flag record or a flyer. Rather, he was extremely prolific. And the people at SST would come to him and comb through his drawings and say, okay, we'll use this for a flyer or we'll use this for an album cover. The visions that he created were independent of the music.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. Greg Ginn's concept of punk was that it wasn't a particular style of music, but, quote, it was an environment where people that made any kind of music that was outcast from the formulaic rock of the time had a venue to play. How did that idea clash with popular concepts of punk?
Well, I think once punk became popular, people had a notion of what it should be. I think that the early 70s scene is a great example of Greg Ginn's vision of what punk was. I mean, look at the Screamers, for example, a band that didn't even have guitars compared to Germs, musicians that barely knew how to play their instruments. You know, to the Weirdos, you know, people who are very accomplished with their instruments, but put on an incredible show with really flashy outfits and intense energy. I mean, they're all very different bands, but I mean, you can't tell the story of LA punk without them, and those bands sound nothing alike.
For some of the bands that signed to SST, the label became a stepping stone to get to major labels. Who were some of those bands, and how was SST helpful in getting them to that next level?
I think the most obvious case is Soundgarden, perhaps the most well-known outside of indie circles of all the bands that had been on SST. Soundgarden attracted interest from major labels, but the band very shrewdly recognized that they weren't ready, that they didn't have quite the following that other bands that were making the leap from the indies to the majors had. So they wanted to get to tour and put out a record with SST and get some experience on the road and build up a following before they made the jump to the major labels.
Now, SST hasn't released any new music since 2014, and there hasn't been a lot going on at the label in the last few years. What are some of the things that have contributed to the decline?
Some of the things that contributed to SST not releasing as much music was, you know, distributors going under and, taking a lot of cash flow out of the loop. And then there was lawsuits involved with artists who maintained that SST had not paid them the royalties that they were owed. And these resulted in very public fights that really eroded the cachet that SST had built up all through the 80s. So that when the 90s came along, when you would think SST would be poised to take that next big step, along with so many other labels, Nirvana happened. And we all know that story.
So ultimately, what do you think the history books are going to say about how SST contributed to popular music?
Well, the sheer volume of incredible music that SST released is going to be its legacy. No other independent label became as big or had such a diverse roster of artists to create such a meaningful impact on the musical landscape. Unfortunately, that legacy is going to be tarnished by the label's business practices and the fact that so many of its artists left the label or sued to get the rights to its music back.
Well, Jim Rulin, thanks a lot for joining us today, and thanks for your book, Corporate Rock Sucks. It's a great contribution to the history of popular music.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Jim Ruland is the author of Corporate Rock Sucks, The Rise and Fall of SST Records. He talked with Steve Gotcher. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Penn Jillette, Ling Ma, and Jim Ruland. Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRbeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
I also never saw him show any enjoyment or understanding of music.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
If you had someone who was actually a business person on that show, it would be the worst show in the world.
And thanks to you, our alphas. Beta Country, let's ride! More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
If you have thrown off some filters, I'll listen to you talk.